Good evening, Colin.
How's it, Ray? Well, you're right to say that people have watched these TED Talks. I'm assuming you've watched a good couple in your time as well.
Oh, absolutely. Very interesting stuff.
Yeah, so the take for this evening's sort of chat was, in the past, most of the business unusuals are for-profit businesses, because that's kind of what business is about. Mm. TED has a rather different plan for how to not make money, but change the world.
Okay.
Yeah, so we get a bit of history to see where it comes from. And I suppose a lot of people who watch the TED Talks but don't necessarily wonder, why would they call them TED? Well, it was a pre-existing conference. It used to just be a conference held once a year that focused on technology, education, and design, the T, the E, and the D. And in the early 2000s, a publisher, storyteller, shall we call him, called Chris Anderson, had raised enough money from publishing a variety of regular publications to create a foundation that bought the rights to these TED Talks. And he wanted to try and change it. He wanted to sort of open it up and get more access to more people. And to his credit, he spotted that rather than just having people sit in an auditorium and listen to the talks, if he could get them to reach more people, they would have a lot more impact. And in 2006, they started posting their first videos online. YouTube began in 2005, so he was right there at the beginning of we do some video. And one of the things they stated right up at the beginning is that all of these talks are only a maximum of 18 minutes. Now, back in 2006, 18 minutes on streaming internet must have felt like a lifetime. These days, it's not too bad. But 18 minutes is probably the line where things start feeling a bit more like a lecture rather than somebody telling you a great story. But he does always make the point that in telling those stories, they need to start with where the audience that's going to start watching this is, and then take them somewhere amazing, a journey that would make them potentially change their mind or affirm something that they thought about the world or themselves or business. And these days, they've had thousands of speakers, and there are thousands and thousands of videos that are available for people to download. And they've got a nice little list for their top 25. And it includes one of the most popular ones from an educationalist called Ken Robinson. I don't know if you've heard any of his stuff, but if you haven't, definitely go and have a listen to this. The suggestions he has for what has been the problem with our education system, i.e. kind of turning education into a factory, making people come out that can comply with things, is fundamentally flawed. And he said this back in 2006. These days, when you hear people talking about fourth industrial revolution and that we must stop training people to work like robots because we've got robots that work better than humans, it's what he was talking about all along. We needed to change that sort of aspect. And in amongst the other talks is one that looks at how we do social entrepreneurship and how we look after charitable sort of work. And there's where the big shift happens. And the reason why I'm considering this, an unusual business, because in the past, a business raises its money from going to venture capitalists or a bank, which says on the basis of your potential product and the market you'll serve, you'll be able to get profits. And so we'll lend you this money in the belief that you'll be able to repay it. But when it comes to that's pretty standard. In charities, it's kind of like, well, we're going to give you this money. We're going to make a whole bunch of conditions to make sure that the recipients you say you're going to help will get it. You must spend almost no money in infrastructure and capacity to be able to deliver it. And you must do this every year. And businesses
That's difficult. That's difficult.
You're kind of tying people's hands behind their back. So they originally started, they dedicated $100,000 to a speaker that was at one of their talks to help them make their idea become a reality. And then they increased that to $1 million. And our own professor, Neil Turek here from South Africa, had won that in 2008. He had a plan to create a university, but specifically for mathematical and scientific sort of exploration and training here in Africa, to effectively say that the next Einstein would come from Africa. And what started in 2008 as a single campus here in South Africa now has six campuses around the continent. And they are doing very well and offering all sorts of courses that are a lot more aligned to the next industrial revolution rather than the past ones. So there is some very good stuff that fits into the back of that. But most recently, or tail end of last year, they went one step bigger because they figured that the real thing that hamstrings real philanthropic work is the amount or the size of the award and the time that the plan has got to survive. And most people say a business plan, you've got 5 years to, become profitable. But they don't say that about charities. They sort of assume you'll never be profitable, so you're basically living on a handout. How are we ever going to get a big scale project that way? So in their audacious project, they invited the speakers that they usually have to come not just with an idea, but to help them turn the idea into a plan. And the plan currently is to have as much as $600 million given to these ideas to give them something to do.
Wow, that's a lot of money, hey, Colin. It's a great idea. My question is, okay, now listening to you say all of this, I would like to have my own TED Talk. I'm sure you would as well. How do you get involved in this? Is there like a filter process?
Indeed. Well, there was a very clever way they did that, because of the TED conferences, the official ones that happen every year, it started with one and then they added into other ones focused on youth and cities and women. And then they licensed in 2013 the option to create TEDx's. And you probably come across a lot more TEDx's because there have been thousands of TEDx events, including there's two here in South Africa that happen every year. In fact, there's a third one that I saw also happens. And so what you do is you apply for the license. They give you all of the guidelines and the sort of material to help you set it up, all of the background to say, here's how you select your speakers, some things you can coach them. But part of that license says you give them the copyright for the videos so that they may host it and make it available for everybody else. They have to be posted up online. Not necessarily all of them will go to the TED website. You can host them on your own TEDx ones, but they want to know that they've got access to a much bigger pool of videos, much greater pool of speakers all around the world to increase the odds of them finding that rare gem that potentially will sort of dent the universe, as it were. And for the most part, that seems to be what they've succeeded at doing. And this is still early days. This Audacious project just launched at the tail end of last year. The next sort of big milestone is next Monday, the 17th of September. They will select their semi-finalists and announce that $600 million award in April next year. The upside is, besides winning the financial award, they will also have access to very many other very high profile, very expert speakers that have been part of TED Talks in the past. Sort of like, winning a Shark Tank or the Dragon's Den type things. It doesn't come with this, well, here's some money, good luck with it, and off you go. And in one respect, if they succeed in doing this, there is a well-known institution that we know that may be significantly disrupted. Because see, part of the issue with having to do social entrepreneurship or charitable work is that a lot of the stuff, certainly for a lot of governments, social projects are part of their own mandate. Taxes get set aside to look after health, welfare, etc.
Yeah.
The fact that so many NPOs and NGOs need to be registered to look after what we've effectively set aside budget, infrastructure, and salaries to do suggests that the problem is often in those bureaucracies or the ability for those people to do something. And then, as we said in the beginning, you know, it's so much harder for a charitable organization with limited means, almost no infrastructure, and a sort of a view from people who donate money to say, but it mustn't go to the infrastructure. It must just go to the recipient, which again, it's kind of hard to do that. Ask somebody to run an airline, but you've got to have the real cheap airport. You're going to say, well, that's not going to be safe. You've got to spend on the airport to ensure that you've got a well-functioning airline. And so this is the sort of shift that they may be pushing for. Let's wait and see. It might fail, but in their failing, perhaps we'll find some more things that help even world bodies. The UN, for the longest time, World Health Organization, has been looking to do some pretty amazing projects itself. But when you're working through other governments and all the bureaucracy that happens there, they are working on a model that may help them move a lot faster, reach a lot more people, and actually do more with that money, perhaps even creating a new way of generating funds to come back. And some of the projects, I'll just mention two of them. One is a satellite that will track methane production or methane leaks in the world, because while CO2 is the principal the most volume given out for climate change, methane is a far more powerful greenhouse gas, or the effect that it has is far greater. So by monitoring where all of the gas is coming out, and truthfully it doesn't seem to be too difficult, you just need to look at it with infrared and you can see the stuff. And then they can say, okay, we've got leaks here and here, or we've got large regions where there's sometimes man-made natural things where it's coming out, in which case some interventions or some knowledge needs to be done. So that's one of them. The other one is a project to try and reclaim a lot of land that has either been worked poorly by farmers in the past or could be turned into arable farmland with some intervention. And they're looking to take an acre at a time and then slowly start transforming it from sort of non-arable, not good for farming, to make it more useful for farming. And if you take a continent like Africa, which is absolutely huge, that has real lots and lots of resources for agricultural output, but not necessarily the right infrastructure and the setup and the training to allow South Africa's rapidly growing population to make use of that while still being, you know, mindful of the natural environment and conservation, then projects like this are exactly what we need to get started. And if the AU is not taking the lead and individual countries sometimes lack the capacity or the will to do it, then I'm very grateful that some guy who just wanted to stand on a stage and tell you 18 minutes with some great ideas is potentially looking to change the world for all of us.
I think it sounds fantastic. From methane to farmland to TED Talks, Colin Cullis with the Business Unusual. Thank you. Great to, of course, have you on The Money Show.